Jim Brown here with another Caper Cast. Thanks for coming. I have some nice capers in the bank now, material recorded on my trip to Maine, talking in the Sterncastle with a few very experienced sailors, both monohull and multihull. But our last few issues have considered mostly interviews with others. I've got something to say by myself this time about multihull construction. If you're not interested in a comparison of how these things are built, then maybe you'll want to go to another podcast. And, oh man, this thing goes for 35 minutes. Christy's going to have a fit. This is boat building, okay? Here we go. I had an email this week from a guy named Keith Lyon. He's one of our Patreon supporters, for which we are very grateful, Keith. And he explained that he was in the process of considering building a SeaRunner 34. That's a sheet plywood boat, old design concept. However, he's had the chance to examine the 35-foot constant camber designed by John Marples. And John's whole constant camber series was really an attempt to, well, let's say, replace the old SeaRunner series, to update and modernize a construction method that really began before Arthur Piver back in the 1950s. But one thing that Arthur Piver used to say was, hey, it's hard to beat good old plywood and glue. That remains true. Even though it's become very difficult and rather expensive to get decent sheet plywood these days, we now have epoxy, which makes a tremendous difference in holding a wooden boat together, whether or not it's sheet plywood construction, such as the Sea Runners, or whether or not it's cold-molded construction, of which constant camber is sort of a streamlined approach to cold molding. If that term is not familiar to you, I'll just say that it's a method of producing plywood in compound curves. That is, it's bent around the boat from one end to the other, and from the deck to the keel, it is compounded, bent in both directions, whereas with flat sheets for planking, one can only have a so-called chine construction. You've got to put corners in the hull form in order to achieve it with sheet material. Another major difference with constant camber compared to SeaRunner construction is that SeaRunners have their framework, their skeleton, balanced against their skin or their planking. The weight of the structure is pretty much divided equally between the skin and the skeleton. Whereas in constant camber, the compound curved method, the weight is pretty much confined to the skin. There's much less skeleton. What that means is that the framing up and stringers and fairing the skeleton before planking, all of that demanding woodwork goes away with constant camber, where one starts by building a mold and then producing big slabs of compound curved plywood, which represent, let's say, one side of a pea pod, and you build two sides of a pea pod out of plywood and put them together, and you have a boat, and there's very little skeleton inside of it. The skin, because of its compound curvature, becomes dynamite strong. If you push on it from the outside, there's sort of no place for it to go. It's like an eggshell. Eggshell rigidity is what Meade Goujon used to call it. Now, just recently, we've had the opportunity to compare these two types of construction with damage. I've explained that my dear old Scrimshaw, a SeaRunner 31, launched in 1972, been sailing for a long time. Of course, she's built like a SeaRunner, sheet plywood construction, before epoxy. She was built with rock-bottom economy materials in a rainforest. Using exterior-grade plywood, the adhesive was so-called weldwood or the urea formaldehyde water mix glue. She was fastened together largely with pneumatically driven galvanized staples, and she was covered on the outside with fiberglass and polyester resin. Incidentally, a very lightweight fiberglass membrane placed over the boat, 4 ounce cloth in most places, sometimes two layers below the waterline, etc., but a very light fiberglass membrane over this old plywood boat. She has survived perhaps better than many plywood multi-hulls because I've understood pretty well how to prevent her from biologically degrading by seeing to very serious ventilation all the time over some 44 years now. And, you know, if you build your own boat, you can always fix it, fix anything. She's had some holes punched in her and have done a fair amount of work on the boat over the years using epoxy. All of her repairs have been made with epoxy to great advantage. But basically, she is a skin and skeleton boat. I sold her about 4 years ago to a guy who never used her. She was bought by Bruce Matlack, my old friend and surfing, windsurfing pioneer, Bruce Matlack. He has her now, and he had her hauled out last winter down there at a boatyard in Central Florida. And for the first time, really, she was subjected to being right in the crosshairs of a big old hurricane. She was blocked up about 15 inches off the ground. The storm came along, blew her off of the blocks, and slid her sideways into a tractor. She was pretty well damaged on the port float. The port float was almost broken in half. Looking at her from outside, it doesn't look like she's damaged badly. There's only one place where the planking is really punctured, and it's below the chine on the port float. But when you get inside and look around, you can see that there's considerable skeletal damage, and it telegraphed away from the initial contact point, tended to cause reverberations for 3 or 4 feet in both directions beyond the break. But now, it just so happens that in the same boatyard and in the same storm, there was a Marples Constant Camber 35. And I've known this boat for a long time. She was built by an absolute maestro boatwright up in Maine. She has been subsequently owned by two friends of mine. Joe Hudson had her for quite a while, called her Good Enough. And I've sailed with that boat with Joe from Maine, hopping and skipping down as far as Rio Dulce in Guatemala. So I know the boat well, and I'll be darned she was in the same boatyard, blocked up off of the ground for the same storm. She got blown off of her blocks, blown sideways into another boat, had damage inflicted that would be much like what damaged Grimshaw. There is a puncture in the outboard side of the float planking. Oh, you know, it's about as big as a laptop, a hole in the boat that's punched in part way. But inside, there is no telegraphed damage. Why? Because there's no skeleton in there to cause the damage, to allow it. And the skin, the planking on the boat, the exoskeleton, is so strong that the comparison with Grimshaw's damage is very interesting. Now, both of these boats are rather easily repaired, although Grimshaw's repair is going to require a lot more sophistication. You've got to get in there and fix that skeleton. Both repairs could conceivably be accomplished with good old water mix weldwood glue and polyester fiberglass. However, now that we have epoxy, there's just no comparison in the success of the repairs between the old method and the new. Now that we have epoxy, boy, we can really get things to stick together. And while Grimshaw was built with the old adhesives, the Constant Camber 35 Marples was built with epoxy. Now, in terms of longevity, let's face it, Grimshaw has been doing pretty good. You know, she's over 40 years old. She's got a lot of miles on her, and she's spent a lot of time in the tropics. But the prospects for lasting for generations are much greater with the epoxy and the Constant Camber boat. There is also an unexpected weight difference between the two boats, the two methods, between the two construction methods. The planking thickness in the Constant Camber boats is roughly twice as thick as it is in the sheet plywood boats. And yet we have found from considerable experience that the Constant Camber boats are somewhat lighter overall. It reveals that the whole business of building a frame and covering it with the skin puts lots of weight in the frame or in the skeleton. And if most of that weight can be put into the planking thickness, into the skin instead, we end up with a stronger, stiffer, lighter boat. That seems to be especially true in the big ones, our charter catamarans, for instance, are not only lighter, but also stronger than in much of the competing construction methods. Now, that's not necessarily true with composite construction, that is, the skin foam skin means by which so many multi-hulls are built today. No doubt that method lends itself to production building, repeat production from the same mold, much more than any type of wood construction. And that, I think, is primarily why it's used, although it can be done very lightweight. If one spends lots of money on foam and carbon fiber or advanced fiber skins for a foam boat, the weight and stiffness properties of the boat can be wonderful, and overall strength properties can be truly wonderful, but they are astronomically expensive if built on a one-off basis. And furthermore, John and I suspect that if a foam glass boat had been in the same boatyard and in the same storm and had been blown off of its blocks sideways into obstructions, that the damage done to the composite-built boat, that is, skin foam skin, would be not necessarily more extensive, but more expensive, far more difficult to repair than in the wood epoxy boats. Now, the reason for that is that there is such a disparity in the hardness, the Young's modulus, the relative stiffness between foam and carbon fiber laminate, let's say. They are so different that when that skin foam skin sandwich gets hit, there is separation between the skin and the foam. And it gets very spooky to try to figure out how far that separation goes. And if during the repair, the builder does not cut back far enough in order to find out where the skin is still really fastened to the foam, and if perhaps water gets in there, now that separation starts to travel. So at least where the owner builder is concerned, if a guy's built his own boat and he knows how to fix it, I have a firm opinion that these wood epoxy boats, whether constant camber or sheet plywood, are relatively easy to repair in the case of damage. And the difference between the sheet plywood boats and the cold molded boats, or constant camber, there's a disparity there too. We've seen that the constant camber boats are marvelously durable, even dramatically resistant to damage, such as we have seen with the big catamaran commercial charter boats. But either type, sheet plywood or constant camber, can be fixed, particularly by the guy who built the boat in the first place. But all of that is pure preamble when it comes to answering the question that was asked by Keith Lyon. His main interest is in building a SeaRunner 34, and he's asking, what, if any, changes would we make in this relatively old design? But hang on, the 34 SeaRunner is the most recent of the SeaRunners. It was designed, I think, in about 1978, some 10 years after the original SeaRunner series, which you may know starts at 25 feet, then 31, 37, and 40. Well, that gap between 31 and 37 is one that I tried to fill back in the 60s when I was drawing the SeaRunners, and I could not work out a 34-footer. I struggled with it for a while and gave up and went to 37 feet. Now, when John Marples and I got together some 10 years later, we had a 31-footer Scrimshaw and a 37-footer, not John's 37, but another one, at the dock here at my place in Virginia. And we both had had years of cruising experience and building and repairing experience in between the times of the original Sea Runner series and the 34. And we spent a lot of time going over those two sizes, in the water even, measuring stuff, really going over those two boats in order to figure out how to come right down the middle with the 34-footer. So right there in the late 70s, I was very much preoccupied with the development of constant camber, in which John also participated, as did Chris White and Dick Newick. But John had the time to go back to Washington State, where he was living at the time, and draw the Sea Runner 34 from scratch. Now, it turned out to be a Sea Runner, all right. It's definitely identifiable as part of the Sea Runner series. But it does have some interesting differences. Its hull forms are very similar to the, say, the 37 or the 31-foot Sea Runner, but they're a bit narrower. We've learned that hull slenderness at the surface, at the waterline, has more to do with performance than practically anything else you can push around. And so to get the needed displacement for cruising, she's a deeper hull form, but a bit narrower at the waterline. And something that John reminded me of today, she's heavier. She's designed and built heavier than the other Sea Runners. It turns out that, say, the 31-foot Sea Runner is based on quarter-inch plywood for most of its structure, and the 37-footer and the 40-footer are based upon 3/8-inch plywood, more or less, and the 34-footer would have been designed for, you know, 5/16-inch plywood, but there ain't no such thing, or there wasn't back then anyway. So the Sea Runner 34 has a relatively thick skin. And furthermore, her skeleton is a bit stronger than in her sister's. John put a bit more meat in her frames, and the stringers are a bit more frequent, closer together. Consequently, the Sea Runner 34 overall weighs about 1,000 pounds more than the constant camber 35. Now, who's to say which would be ultimately stronger? It would depend upon the nature of the failure mode, however she would be damaged if you were to take two similar boats, but one of each material, and damage them the same way. Who knows what it would come out like? Today, with epoxy, there's just no doubt in my mind that both of them would be wonderfully durable. I suspect that the damage in the sheet plywood vessel, that is the skin skeleton vessel, would perhaps telegraph more than in the constant camber boat. But with epoxy holding things together these days, maybe not. Maybe not. So let's say that one would be equally satisfied with the prospect of damage resistance, overall strength, durability from each of those two designs, the Sea Runner 34 and the Constant Camber 35. So what other differences are there for us to consider? Well, both of those boats are designed to include an inboard diesel engine with outboard power as an option. Well, the truth is that the Constant Camber boat is not well suited to the addition of outboard power on a so-called Newick sled. Side-mounted, retractable, outboard motor doesn't fit very well in the 35. You could sure do it in the 34, much like it has been done in Scrimshaw in the 31. But in either case, the boat really deserves an inboard. There are some interesting comparisons, differences in the livability of the interior in both designs. The main difference, in my view, is that in the Sea Runner 34, one does have full standing headroom in the dressing room compartment, the one that's just aft of the head, whereas in the 35-foot constant camber boat, the foredeck swoops down, much like in the appearance of a Newick boat, and it does limit the headroom and the utility and the darkness, I mean, and the lightness in the dressing room compartment, because in the Sea Runner we've got a nice big window up there. But in the 35, that swoop down foredeck gives you more deck space, and also the appearance of the thing. It just looks like it's going 99 miles an hour while sitting at the dock. It's really a very beautiful boat. Also, back in the stern castle, the superstructure overhangs the hull sides, which provides that wonderful storage space right behind the stern castle seats. But never mind, the stern castle is a wonderful facility in boats. Both of those boats, the wonderful thing about the stern castle is that when you're sitting at the dinette table, you've got eye level at window level, which just doesn't happen in most boats of that size. They both have that distinctive Sea Runner stern castle window looking out straight aft at the wake, which has always been an indispensable feature of these boats. To consider the Sea Runner 31 for a minute, the one thing about the boat that I've always been disappointed in is that the cockpit is not long enough to stretch out in. And to solve that problem, we used to think you had to go all the way to 37 feet. But no, John has worked it out in both the Sea Runner 34 and the Constant Camber 35. You can definitely stretch out in the cockpit. As cruising boats go, both of these boats are very good performers. They each have that nice deep swing centerboard and that nice big cutter rig and that nice big kick-up skeg rudder. So let's talk about the undertaking, the monumental task of building either one of these boats. In today's economy, with today's available materials, oh my, the 34-footer is composed of thousands of individual pieces of wood that have to be pretty much carved on all six surfaces. Every piece of wood has roughly six surfaces, that is, two sides, a top and a bottom, and two ends. And in boat building, almost each of those six sides has to be contended with, treated, shaped in some way. And boy, by the time you get finished building one, you've had your belly foot of individual pieces of wood. Whereas in the Constant Camber boats, once you have the Constant Camber panels made, the parts count is way down. It's something like 40% of the number of parts in a Sea Runner. However, it's the old trade-off. In order to build in Constant Camber, you've got to start out building a mold. There's a lot of pieces in that. It's relatively simple construction, but there's a lot of it. And then when laminating the panels, of course, the builder must handle hundreds, maybe thousands of pieces of wood that go on the mold as diagonal planking, at least three layers. And then you've got to get into vacuum bagging. You know, it's a technological undertaking. Nevertheless, all of those individual, small, long, narrow planks that go onto a Constant Camber mold in order to build those panels, those individual pieces, the parts count might be very high, but it's easy to produce them. The stuff already comes as plywood or veneer, and all you have to do is cut it to length and carve one shape done to a template, one edge rather, done to a template. And that's not a bottleneck. Producing the individual planks that go onto a Constant Camber mold is not a bottleneck in the construction. So maybe we can say that in terms of the parts count, there's not a lot of difference between the Sea Runner sheet plywood construction and the Constant Camber construction in terms of how much labor it takes to produce those parts anyway. When you consider the mold and everything, maybe it's kind of a wash. The real advantage in Constant Camber is if you're going to build more than one boat. Well, you are anyway. If you're only building one trimaran, you still have three hulls to build, and you can use the mold for all three hulls and other components in the boat that call for compound curved panels. So thinking of it today, it's pretty much a wash between the two construction methods as to the nature, the dauntingness, the challenge to the builder, except on one level. And that level can be really important to an owner builder. It's the pay-as-you-go level. Constant Camber requires a rather substantial initial investment. It's not cheaper overall, but it does require a bunch of money up front in order to get the materials for the mold and to buy that stack of plywood or veneer, whatever it is you're going to use for building your constant camber panels, and you need a lot of epoxy right at the start. Whereas with sheet plywood construction, such as in the Sea Runners, you can start out with, well, when we started building Scrimshaw, we had $700 and we thought we were rich. But then we didn't have to pay for plans. And even today, you could start the project with just, a couple $100s for material to build the strong back or whatever. And if you have a steady job, maybe $400 or $500 a month would keep you going for a long time. Whereas with constant camber, it would really make sense to dive in with, $4,000 or $5,000, depending on the size of the boat. Some of that is money you would not have to spend later, and the overall costs of the two types might not be a whole lot different, because the essential cost is not in the structure, it's in the outfitting. The extent to which one would be willing to, use a rebuilt engine, a salvaged mast, used sails recut, that's where the real money is to be saved. And it works just fine unless you're going to go racing. And neither of these boats are race boats. They're not intended for it. Of course, they can be raced, particularly side by side. Wouldn't that be an interesting comparison? Frankly, I don't know how it would come out. But if Keith Lyon were to come up to me, or to John Marples perhaps, and without any preamble, not without any previous interest in a given design or construction method, if they were to just ask us, hey, I want to build my own cruising boat, what do you think I should have? Well, if you really want to go cruising instead of go building, or go building so long and at such a cost that when you're done with the project, you don't have enough money or enough energy to go cruising. If you really want to go sailing now, and not everybody does, but if that's the main goal, is to get out on the water and hit it, then there's nothing like our Sea Clipper series of trimarans. They are sheet plywood boats. They're rank simple to build, as low cost as possible, extremely durable, although not quite as livable, size for size, as the Sea Runners or the constant camber boats. For example, to have something like the livability one would enjoy in the Sea Runner 34 or the constant camber 35, one would probably choose the Sea Clipper 38. It would be significantly easier, faster and cheaper to build than either of the earlier designs. But even with the addition of what we call wing pods, the Sea Clipper series is not as roomy. It's not quite as easy to make use of space such as in the mouse castle that Sea Runners provide. Myriad storage spaces here and there. Now the Sea Clippers, some would say, are not as beautiful as the other two, and you got to learn to love your boat. The Sea Clippers look a bit more military because they are really stripped down, purpose-built, purpose-designed for what we really think of as a very highly specialized work boat. A cruising boat is highly specialized for a specific work, and Sea Clippers really speak to that. However, that was not Keith Lyon's original question. He was asking, if I were to build a Sea Runner 34, would I make any changes? If I were doing it myself, would I make any changes to the design of the boat, even though it goes back to the late 1970s? My personal answer to that is nope. I don't think I would change one square inch of the configuration of that Sea Runner 34. Now, I have not sailed a lot in that design. Very little, in fact, but I have recently had the opportunity to visit aboard a very good one. Perhaps the nicest Sea Runner I've ever seen is a 34-footer. It's owned by a young couple in Florida. They chose not to build, but instead to buy the boat and pay it off. That way, instead of pay-as-you-go while building. I hope to have a lot more to say about that boat in the future. These folks haven't really been anywhere in the boat yet. But boy, do they have the fire in their belly, and their motives for that lifestyle are very interesting. We'll be hearing from them later in future Capercasts, I hope. Of course, there are a few minor things that one could do to the Sea Runner 34 today in order to bring it up to date in matters other than its configuration. You'll remember that I said we wished that we could have gotten 5/16 inch plywood back in the 70s and 80s in order to build that boat. Well, nowadays you can get plywood in millimeter sizes, commonly. And if one were to use 7mm or 8mm plywood in the 34-foot Sea Runner today, you could save a lot of weight. Of course, that Okume plywood these days is very lightweight anyway, and it would be, you know, just great to build a boat out of that stuff, say at 8mm, if you can get it. It turns out that that stuff is all imported. It's a tropical wood, and the quality is iffy in some cases. It turns out that the Plywood Rating Association for international imported plywoods is not nearly as reliable as the British and American so-called 1088 standard. You'll find a lot of Okume plywood these days that's stamped 1088, and it doesn't mean a damn thing. There really is a lot of fraud going on in wood these days. But if you get the right stuff and you can pay for it, that'd be a great way to go. You'd save yourself £500 that way, and if you were to get something like Sitka spruce or Alaskan yellow cedar for doing the framing, building the skeleton, that would save another £500, maybe. And by combining those materials with good epoxy, and by good epoxy I mean WEST, Goujon Brothers stuff, I wouldn't use anything else on a boat of mine of this type these days. It's really made for the job. And it's less toxic than the other brands, in my opinion, even though it may smell a little more. You don't have to be able to smell toxic gases coming off of epoxy resin. Some of it's odorless, and it's not good. One must protect himself anyway with plenty of ventilation, and if you haven't got ventilation, you've got to have a carbon respirator, and we could go running off into that whole safety thing of boat building. And it is important, if you're going to build your own boat these days, you got to protect yourself. You also need a decent covered workspace and some good tools. Oh boy, it's a wonderful project if you really like projects like that. But boy, it's a big one. And if you want to cut down on the monumental nature of the undertaking of building yourself your own seafaring sailboat, and you want it to be a multi-hull, particularly a trimaran, boy, I'd do a Sea Clipper. I would do a Sea Clipper any time. If I didn't have Sea Clipper, I'd do either of the others, and I'd be leaning toward the Sea Runner 34. Just because, you know, I used to work in that town. I've been sort of weaned on Sea Runners, and I like them. And I'm so glad that other people like them. And I'm also so pleased that they have evolved into these other design series, the Constant Camber series and the Sea Clipper series. And none of that would have happened without John Marples. Here's to you, John. Hey, we got something going on here, brother. Because with what's going on these days, it looks like it just might be coming around again on the guitar. People will be thinking about having their own boat so as to sail around the geopolitical hotspots, consolidate their assets in a home that can be moved without burning much fuel, get down to the real reality, close to the bone, urgency, day-to-day survival, and have your destinations separated by the seafaring experience so that one destination becomes so very clearly contrasted with another. Whether you're worried about a global collapse of some kind or not, I'm telling you, going out in the ocean, getting on the boat in one place and getting off in another is just way too much fun not to be doing it. You never get over that experience. In a way, you never recover from it. Economically or psychologically, a lot of real cruising sailors spend the rest of their days in reverse culture shock. Well, I should speak for myself. And if you really want to go do it, there are a whole lot of really nice monohulls around these days for very little money. But if you want to take the whole trip by building the boat yourself and then taking it to sea, perhaps with wives and chillens and all that, that's what I call taking the whole trip. And any one of these boats, Sea Runners, Constant Camber, Sea Clipper, they'll do the job, hey. They'll do the job for you. Don't worry about that. I hope you get one and sail it a long way. Fair winds. Bye-bye.